All right, here we go. So tonight's class is called Matzah Madness, a Practical Survivor Guide for Pesach. Okay? Pesach is something which is, for many people, there's a lot of fond memories. But if you're actually involved in any of the organizational part, it's very intimidating. And the key point here is Benjamin Franklin, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. If you feel that you're going to start thinking about Pesach like a couple days before, hoping to just it'll all come together. It may not. Okay. And if you're going to be doing your own, so let's go around. Are you going out? Josh, where are you? What are your plans? Preliminary plans.
So they're in flux. So
Okay.
spending the week at my girlfriend's family's.
Nice. And where they live? Okay. So that's kind of easy. It's like a little bit of turnkey situation. But you still have your apartment here you have to deal with. Well, we're going to talk about that. Jamie, what's your plans? Okay, so all right, good.
We're very, very strictly for Pesach.
Good.
So my house is going to turn into an alien invasion.
Okay, so we're going to talk about how to do that okay, good. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, Eitan, what's your plan? What's your plan known as? Nice. Scott, what are your plans for Pesach?
With the family for the first night, probably MJE for the second night, the second Seder, and then second days. I don't have any plans. I'm still trying to nail down a place for that.
Okay, good. All right, good.
Okay,
Okay, this is good. All right, so the first step is how not to hate Pesach. I'm being, you know, because Pesach can be so intimidating. Like, I don't know where I'm going. I know that I'm going to be in my apartment for some time. I got to manage that. How do I do that? It seems like a lot of work, a lot of cleaning, kosher.
cleaning is probably the most intimidating,
Right, so
or
we're
like
going to.
figuring out what you're going to eat. For that week.
Right.
'Cause like when I
So.
first started fellowship, I didn't know that like corn was kitneo.
Right.
So I thought when I had ketchup and it was like, oh, well it's got like
Corn syrup.
what's that stuff? Corn
Corn
syrup.
syrup.
So I was like, I thought I was like doing like great. And they're like, no, you can't have corn.
All right. So, but okay, good. But still, as long as you didn't have chametz, it's all that's the main thing. But yeah, we'll talk about
Right.
actually. You can go in the stores. The Heinz Company, on behalf of the Jewish community, has a what they're called the Passover edition ketchup, where they exchange the
Is that
corn.
new?
Yeah, this last second the second year, with sugar. There you go. All right, so here's the deal.
It's like the Coke. It's like the Coke.
Okay, so the first thing to do,
Yeah.
I'm going to knock it now. I'm not going to take anything for granted. Everybody, look at your sheet carefully. Okay, what I put here is the calendar because I'm going to make this bigger for you, Scott, so you can see it. Okay, so the first thing is just to get you into the framework here. So we have a thing called Shabbat HaGadol. Shabbat HaGadol is the Shabbos before Pesach, okay? And typically, all the synagogues will be talking about all things Pesach. Really, there's a mitzvah to learn the laws of Pesach and all the holidays 30 days before the holiday. So we just had Purim, so we're right on schedule. Now, when do we look at the calendar over here? What night do we search for the chametz? What English date? 21st at night, Sunday night, which is this year corresponds to April 21st. You got to search for chametz. If you're going to be out of town, you got to do it the night before you're leaving town. Okay, we'll talk about that. Then there's the Erev Pesach, which is at roughly around 10 o'clock in the morning. Rabbinically, you can't have any chametz, and then by noon, biblically, you can't have chametz. Okay, so that's most you know the prohibition of chametz starts before the holiday of Passover. That's not intuitive. That's a curveball. Okay, then we have on so then Monday night, the 22nd is Seder number one. Tuesday night, no, sorry, I. Yeah, Monday night, the 22nd is Seder number one. Tuesday night, the 23rd is Seder number two, going into the hall. So The 23rd and the 24th, those are days of Yom Tov, which have the same laws of Shabbat with some leniencies, okay? Then you have the intermediate days called Chol HaMoed, which we're going to get into, the intermediate days. And then we have, starting on Sunday night, the 28th, we have the 7th and 8th day of Pesach. It is not uncommon for MGers when you grow up, especially in the Reform movement. You think that Passover is, how long is it? One day long, one Seder. That's it. Many people, that, so just to be aware, there's the last days of Yontif, which are actually like the holidays, which have a probe, you know, are like days of Shabbat. In Israel, it's one day. In outside of Israel, it's 2 days. Okay, so we have 2 days in the beginning, 2 days at the end. These are just be aware of that. Maybe that's super obvious, but just to bring everybody up, we'll get into that. Now, I'm just going to go through our little checklist over here. Okay. Invitations for hospitality. Okay, many MGers have who live in the Upper West Side say, you know something, I'm not going to schlep to my parents' house. I'm going to make Pesach for friends, and we're going to have an awesome Seder. That's good. So the question is, who shall I invite to my Seder and Pesach meals who need a place? We see in the beginning of the, what do we say in the beginning of the Haggadah? Anybody needs a Pesach, come on over and eat. We should talk about the character of the meal. The meal should be one of inclusivity and welcome people don't have. So you could take the one strategy that MGers in the past, instead of trying to go to other people's house, is say, you know something? I'm going to make my own Seder. And you could, you know, man or woman, make your own Seder and invite a amount of people. It could be one person, it could be three people, and make the Seder. You could do it. You know, the best way to learn it is to do it. Okay? So it's an option. Also, who should I invite to my Seder at Pesach Meals to enhance my experience? In other words, who will be, who are going to be into it? In other words, sometimes you'll go to family members. Everybody has this in every family. You're going to have members of the family who, shall we say, are not into it. And they communicate it. And they say words like, can we eat yet? And they say that repeatedly, pretty much after you start. Okay? They are the Debbie Downer of the Seder, okay? Or the negative Ned, whatever. I don't want to pick on any gender, okay? Also, if you're going to be a guest, you have to find out who's hosting a Seder and Pesach meals that I would like to join, okay? You want to, and the key thing, item number D is ASAP. Do not, this is not like Shabbos meal. You can respectfully call somebody Wednesday. Okay, respectfully. Unrespectfully, Thursday. Okay, Friday, below industry standards. Okay, all right. But sometimes if you have a very close relationship, they say, if they give you express permission, then you could do that. But basically, people have to have a menu. Have to have a menu. They got to shop. They got to cook the food. So therefore, they need a little lead time. They cannot do that on Friday afternoon. Pesach, you need a longer lead time. Okay, so you got to. If you want to go to some people's house, you want to find out who's hosting Sedarim, you need to check out basically now, okay? Because spots fill up, people are hosting, spots are filling up. You know, you snooze, you lose. Okay? Any questions? Is it self-evident? Okay, if you are a guest, ask what you can bring. You know what I mean? You're not at a hotel. Got to be, you know, a basic etiquette. Mom and dad taught you this. You're coming over there. You want to bring some wine, you know, especially because Sedarim, especially if you're going to go to a friend's house, Sedarim are super expensive. First of all, as you may or may not know, the cost of food since last year had probably gone up on many of the items, 100%, like eggs, over 100%. Meat, 50%, 60%. So don't make it a more of a potluck thing if you're going to go to your friend's house, okay? At least bring wine, whatever you can bring, okay? Obviously kosher for Passover. And if you're a host, you can suggest how the guests can help with food or Seder preparations. Or if it's not for food, I would like you to maybe take, you know, prepare a Seder Dvar Torah so you can share, enhance it educationally. Okay? Not just the food, the matzah, the wine, dessert, fruit, whatever it is, but also things. Hey, Stacy, welcome. Okay?
Hi.
Okay, so we continue on. So the key thing is, if you're gonna be hosting, you want to get things going on now. If you are guesting, you want to get on early, and that's it. Most of Adam just got engaged this week. Beautiful news. Beautiful news. Beautiful news for the Jews. Yes. Okay.
Come to the dinner.
Okay, please come to the dinner. All right. First of all senior fellows say, hey, welcome, 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 welcome. Okay, good. Pizza and the sushi should be arriving shortly. All right, we keep on going. Pesach at home. Okay, many of you already mentioned they're going to be Pesach at home. All right, let's talk about this. There are numerous iterations. Do we have another? Yeah, we have another sheet right here. I do. Look at this. So Pesach at home. Okay, so you have category number one are parents who aren't kosher observant but are open to a Pesach-friendly environment. Okay, so you got to navigate that. So that will mean that you'll work with them. So again, that means if you have family who are not comfortable or confident of doing, because Pesach is the next level of kosher, as far as we're going to get into it, you just can't be showing up if the Seder is on Monday night, showing up Monday morning, then you're going to be able to pull it off. That is not enough time because at the very least, you're going to have to clean the kitchen, kosher the kitchen, cook the food, and that takes a lead time. Okay. Now, they're all one simple option, which many MGers have availed themselves, is we have many, there'll be many caterers and supermarkets that have all pre-made food. So you can, you know, all you have to do is, and if they're, we're going to get to this word, if they're not absorbed, for example, go, if they're not observant and they don't want to be, and they don't want to make it a potent thing, you can take your kosher Passover food, wrap it up in tinfoil and put it into their treif oven. Not a problem. Very important to know that. Okay? Because chametz is not COVID. It's not a disease. Okay? It does not infect you. It's just that you just can't have your kosher Passover food lying on the non-kosher or not you know, chametz, the racks or whatever. You just have to, you know, basically you have your, you wrap it up in tinfoil. You put it in their oven, and then you're good to go. Okay. Also, if you we're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to koshering, but just skip ahead. Self cleaning is you basically put an oven through a self clean cycle, and that is a kosher for Passover. That's koshered. Okay. Yeah, that is a kosher for Passover. It's koshered. Great. Okay, so let's keep on going. So they aren't kosher observed, but they're open to make kosher environments. So then you have to work out sort of like you have to be involved in some negotiations. The question is, even if you clean the place up and you kosher it, are they going to bring in midweek chametz, non-kosher Passover stuff? So you have to work that out. So if there are, then you just have to have like a kosher Passover section, which is like sealed, and make sure that, and that the best thing to do is you're going to be using paper plates, disposable items, and that's how you're going to navigate the situation. And if they're eating chametz, just a very important rule, chametz is stricter than regular non-kosher. You can't eat at the table with them eating chametz at the same time. And we're talking about real chametz. We're talking about bread, pasta, cookies, real chametz. I'm not talking about
the real deal.
The real deal, okay? We're not talking about kidneys, okay? So, but you have to talk to the family and work this out. Now, if you have hostile parents, because at MG we do have parents who are hostile, there are people that said, like, we're not doing anything, and we want you not to touch our kitchen at all, and we want to leave all the bread on the counter. This is literally, I'm quoting, okay? If you have parents who are more accommodating, you should be grateful for them, because not everybody's so lucky as you are, okay? Some of you may have people who are going to, there are many Jews that don't, are very common, many Jews are not kosher during the year, but are kosher for Passover. There is such an idea. It's not being hypocrite, because that is, because the punishment for eating chametz is karet, cut off from the Jewish people. Why is that? Because chametz and matzah is basically part of our fundamental covenant of being a Jew. This is our origin story. So if I'm eating chametz, I'm saying I'm not really part of the Jewish people. Or it's intrinsically reflective. You know what I'm saying? So now again, many people don't know, they were not educated, so we're not here to judge people, but that's so many people up their game for Pesach. And it's what they call a lav. You get, if it was a case of if there was a Beis Din and they gave warning, you can get, they have whips. Person knowingly ate a cheeseburger at a time when there was a Jewish court that could do capital punishment, corporal and capital punishment, and you had two witnesses that warned you, says, if you eat this cheeseburger, you will get malkot, whips, you would say, I'm going to do it anyways, then you would get whipped 39, you know, up to 39 times. Yes, Barry. No, because that has to be, you have to do it knowingly and willingly. That person did a bishogeg, did by accident, or they weren't educated. But you didn't know. But you didn't know law. No, it has to be an act of rebellion. In other words, like it has to be. You have to, in order to violate Pesach, you have to know about Pesach. It can't be just like I happen to eat a sandwich. I have no idea that it's Passover. Yes, Jamie. Yeah. Ah, so good, excellent point. So they have at the Beis Din, they have a doctor who assesses the person, and if they can only take one whip, they only do one whip. But as a stead, it's a status of what they call the 39 Malkos, which a person can take it. Malkos. What? No, because it has to be whipping and not death penalty. Right. That has not been operational for 2,000 years, is FYI. Okay. Yes. It's a good way to measure the severity of the prohibition, not as far as the actuality. Yes. Yeah, exactly right. Adam, question. Correct.
Is that in all cases, including this?
Yeah, including this one. In other words, not only, okay, what he's added, bringing all next level a point. But not only that the doctor says he can't, the person can't sustain that, but let's say because of the trauma of the whipping, the person, relieves himself automatically because of the stress, automatically at that point they're done. Okay, whatever. These are details of the law that are not relevant. But what we're dealing with relevant is Pesach, because Pesach is coming, all right? So there's no Malkus, but it's a way of measuring the severity. We keep on going. Okay, now. Now, another thing, parents who are kosher observe, but at a different standard than the child. This happens. I've had families, MJEers, whose families, this is very common, who are sushi. Yeah, it's for us, but we have, but Leah has a sign for it. We can, I mean, okay, so then bring it. Obviously, okay. So obviously, bring it into the room. We got it for you. Okay, we're taking a sushi break here, guys. Hold on. Okay. We'll give everybody a second. Okay, roommates. Does anybody here have a non-Orthodox or non-Jewish roommate? Okay, that's good. That solves problems.
But in case.
All right, but you should just know. All right, first of all, it's very common for MJEers to have either non-Orthodox or non-Jewish roommates. So as you can imagine, it's a problem because that person is not observing chametz, law of prohibition of chametz, and you have to basically, you know, have your stuff basically in your room. It's a very big hassle. All right, I'm not going to go into this. It's not relevant. It's basically no different than when you're with a parents who don't want to be observant. So you have to keep yourself sealed, you keep yourself separate, and you have to work it out. Maybe they're not, you know, you'll make you have your own, maybe you have a kosher pesto, a toaster oven, etc. Okay, let's keep on going. Shopping for Passover. Everybody here is going to be some shopping for Passover, because I don't think anybody, except for Josh, is not going to have eight days worth of meals taken care of that he doesn't have to buy anything. So everybody's going to buy something. So, okay, very key thing. So the easy thing to do is go to a kosher supermarket. Are you guys familiar that there are different, just like in New York, just like here, you have Trader Joe's and Whole Foods. The price point, shall we say, is structured not the same. You've noticed that. So in kosher supermarkets, like in the five towns, there's Gourmet Glot and there's ColSave, owned by the same company, and one is higher end, more expensive, and one is more bargain oriented, or like a more of a Costco kind of thing. So one thing that people do is you'll go to Evergreen is a kosher place in what do you call it, in Muncie, and they and you can order, And therefore, you can take some advantage of the out of New York City pricing. Okay? Just, you know, there's a class. I'm just giving you a move.
Evergreen. We're 3 days before Pesach. They canceled everything. They told me they were out of matzah, and they only wanted me to send me the cold cuts. And I was like, great. I only did that to reach $100 minimum delivery. I canceled everything, and you know, I had to buy. So they don't, you know,
Okay,
they
so
got it in advance.
plans about. So again, that goes back to you know, you can't. Everything has to be. My wife has already done initial thing of shopping for Pesach already, the first wave. Okay, just because you want to, a because stuff because as I'm glad that Diane brought this up. The way that the kosher providers of companies, they do a let's say kosher Passover run, and when it's done. It's done. And if you're going to be showing up, the stores will get more and more, what do you call it? The more and more the place will become the various options will get thinned out as time goes on. So I cannot encourage you to shop early. Because you get all the first of all, you get the greatest selection, A, and B, you can get the best pricing. And you don't have any headache. You're gonna pull up to do your Pesach shopping on Monday the 22nd. You will pay the most amount of money. You have the least amount of selection, and you might not get all the items you need. This is not halacha. This is just practically just you know. And in New York City, you got kosher marketplace. You know, you don't have that many. There's limited options here, and there's a lot of kosher consumers here. So that's it. Next. Another benefit of the takeout for kosher Passover is to free up time to prepare educational content and energy for the Seder. The biggest problem that people do not anticipate is that they show up to the Seder and they are exhausted because either they have been spending their time cleaning, koshering, shopping, cooking, being the hostess with the mostest by having, and then they pull up and then they drink one glass of wine. They're like, or they push themselves, and many people will have to be at work on the Monday Erev Pesach, so they're really exhausted, and they want, if you had a benefit, you could take off some time and take a little nap. It's great, but one way to not stress yourself out is to augment or to buy some takeout food, just so you don't have to, because cooking, menu planning, cooking, shopping, cooking is a thing, and you don't have to buy everything takeout, but. It just to relieve it, just a classic move. Next, meat, fish, and poultry. Here's the deal. Meat, fish, and poultry. Hey, Toby, how are you? So, in the fridge, in the kitchen. The whole case. That's it. So, all right, so meat, fish, and poultry. All the stuff is intrinsically kosher for Pesach. You just have, even if you're going to go to a non-kosher fish store, just have to, we discussed it, buy the whole fish, identify it. You just have to wash it very diligently when you get it back. So that's it. So if you buy it before Pesach, so meat, fish, and poultry, if you buy it before Pesach, a lot of stuff will be it's kosher to Pesach all year round, and that's it. Dairy, most of the meat dairy has an issue with the vitamin D. They will put in a either chametz or kitnios ingredient. So they do a special run. You'll see kosher pasta. All the New York-based milk companies will have the thing will kosher run. But if you don't get that, buy all your milk in advance, and that small amount will be bottled. But chametz is nullified 1 to 60 before Pesach. On Pesach, you buy it on Pesach. It's not nullified at all. And that's part of the stringency of Pesach. Okay? Milk. A heavy cream is fine. As long as it's just pure product, milk, and even butter. Not cheese, all kosher cheese is typically is designed as being, if you look at the kosher cheeses, it all says kosher Pesach all year round. They do that on purpose. Okay. Anybody have a pet here? Anybody have a pet? Okay, just so everybody should know, even though that your pet is not obligated to any of the mitzvos, but you cannot get, not only can you not eat chametz, you can't eat chametz in the mixture, you can't get benefits for chametz. So even if your pet food is like dog food is full of chametz, you're benefiting from the, you can't own it, and you're benefiting from it. So you have to have make sure that you're, they have lists where your pet is, the pet food has, you know, it's like meat, chicken, and corn, which they do not have to, they don't have the problem of, dogs have the problem of kidney yolks. You can own kidney yolks on Pesach, you can serve it to your animals, you can actually serve it to your children, okay, little kids, okay, yes. What? Your dog, you have an obligation to take care of your dog. Yeah, but you're benefiting because your dog is not dying. You typically love your dog and you want your dog to be sustained. So therefore, sustaining your animal is a benefit to you. In fact, if people go on, you know, vacation, they'll bring in their dog to a dog hotel, which will cost you $5,200 a day. Okay, so there, that's what it would cost. Okay. Yes.
There that said, like, that's with not
It has to be, it would have to be, it would have to be, okay. So there's a, the problem is that you cannot own chametz, and I can't even own chametz in a mixture. Now, how much of a mixture can I not own? So we're strict to not even have even. So let me get back to you on that one. But basically, we don't generally have chametz even in a mixture because if there's a kazayas in the whole box in total, that could be a problem. Okay, of ownership. But typically the move is to have the dog food, which has the kidney yolks. Okay, that's fine. That, yeah, yes, correct. This is the big one. Do all items need to be kosher, Pesach, Hashgacha, certified? So everybody agrees that fruit and vegetables and eggs and milk, cheese, you know, cheese, or use, there are a lot of products, pure products that do have come with kosher Pesach, which are not necessarily required. If you go onto my Alaka chat, you ask me something which is very important to you, like, you know, basic, like pure nuts. You buy it before Pesach because any possibility of chametz will be batel, even though it's unlikely to be there. You could buy it without a kosher Pesach certification. The reason why I bring that up is because anytime something gets kosher Pesach certified, the price goes up. Okay, if you're gonna say, okay, obviously you want to save 10 cents, obviously don't do that. But some items, you know, so we'll talk about that
Bye.
further. Buy before Pesach. Okay. I can't give you a comprehensive list of all things. I'll start adding the stuff on the Halacha chat as we get a
Oh,
little
you don't
closer.
need 100.
You can
Well,
buy it
just
on
double
Pesach.
check.
Or that's, but there's no chametz concerns there. Okay. Simchas Yontif gifts. There's an obligation for the father to provide his wife and daughters with clothing or new shoes for Pesach. Just let everybody know that. So just let you know. Okay. Okay. So that's part of the being happy on the holiday. Okay. As soon as they can appreciate a gift, which is pretty darn young. I don't know, maybe like three. I don't know. Okay. New clothes, new shoes, accessories, something, yeah, something that you will enjoy on Yontif. Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna be like a, you know, new TV, but no, it has to be like typically clothing, shoes, and jewelry is the typical classic thing. Next, Pesach cleaning versus spring cleaning. Okay, this is a big mythology. People believe that Pesach cleaning is spring cleaning, so therefore it become rug. Well, we got to get the person to wash the rug, you know, deep clean the rug and wash the drapes, and they go to Crazy Town. We need to declutter. Now that might that's you could do that, but it's nice to do. But basically, the measurement there's two there. So far as cleaning for Pesach, you have to divide your entire house into two parts. There's a kitchen, which requires one level of cleanliness, and the rest of your house. The rest of your house, it has to be cleaned to two levels of two metrics. One is that I could do a bedikah. Unfortunately, the minhag that people have, which is putting out the 10 things, actually, I would argue it's a very distracting custom. The better metaphor is CSI. Any room that you have where chametz is brought in during the year, where you bring in your sandwich, have to be checked. And you have to be able to say that this is a chametz-free zone. Like, you know, like in the CSI, they put like a tape there. You check this thing. It is a chametz-free zone. So the whole cleaning, you're not supposed to do the bedika beforehand. You're supposed to make the place. So if you have piles of clothes and piles of papers and it's a big mess, it will make bedika like impossible because you have to look at every surface area. So what the bedika is, the cleaning is to make the place bedika-able, A, and be nice for yontif. Like every Shabbos yontif, the house has to be cleaned up. So it's two levels. So it doesn't mean you have to be deep cleaning anything. You have to be scrubbing the walls and whatever. People go crazy. The kitchen has to be clean because it's a preparation to be koshered, which we'll get into shortly. Okay? Keep on going. Searching for the chametz. Okay, sorry about that. Now, there are certain things you have to search your house, but there are certain things that you can search beforehand. For example, anything which is not part of the house. So all the pockets and all the bags that you have, backpacks, purses, you can check that week before. Your house, any container, your car, which is not your house. Like if you have a chest of drawers, that should be checked. If chametz is ever brought there, I mean, whatever, in the rare case. But now this is where if you are a very anal retentive, neat person, I only eat in the kitchen, you are blessed because you only have to check a place where chametz is brought in. If you have a very rigid boundary thing, like we only have chametz here, there is no eating in the living room. You know, if you're part of that household, on Pesach, you're good. So then you only have to search one room, okay? Most people are more chill. And also, if you live in Manhattan, you don't have many rooms. You have to basically have like one, two rooms. That's it. Three rooms. That's it. Okay. Your office. You have an office. Before you go, you got to make sure that place, even though it's not your domain, but they give you permission, you have to make sure it's humming, your desk, your drawers. You got to. So before you go, let's say you're going to go, you make sure, let's say the Thursday or Friday before, make sure all the hummus is out.
What if you share a desk?
So you have to just take your chametz out. In other words, as they say, your chametz, your problem. Their chametz, their problem. Okay?
Like, not necessarily like eating like at literally the same table, but like for example, my office, like the desks are like one long desk with like sections. Can I eat at my station separate, even if other people are eating next to me?
Let me look into that exactly. That's a good question. What is it? Because it's defined by one table, or it's de facto really not the same table because, you know, they're 25 feet away. Okay. Let me look into that. All right. Let's keep on going. As you may or may not know, you need to do some reorganization of your pantry and cupboards because you're going to have your kosher pesto stuff. Most people I know, many people sell chametz. All that chametz has to be put into a cupboard, sealed. And that's it. And all your regular year long chametz vessels have to be separated and sealed so you don't end up pulling out a plate and things. You have to put all your chametz stuff in cupboards that are going to be sealed. And you have your kosher Pesach stuff with your products and your pots and pans and your plates and your silverware. And that's sort of that. You got to factor some take some reorganization time. Just have to wipe it out, make sure there's no obvious chametz. Now, so basically you have three sections in your kitchen. You're gonna have your chametz if you sell your chametz. Now, if you have very little chametz, it is a whopper of a leniency. Or it's only just a little history, just a 5 second history. Nobody used to sell their chametz until the 1600s. It's just when the Jews were only allowed to, in the Middle Ages, Jews were not allowed to do a lot of a lot of professions. In many parts of Europe, we could not own land. And there were very limited ways to make money. So one of the things that in Poland specifically Jews did was producers and proprietors of taverns. So Jews would own a huge amount of their money would be in beer and vodka. Because they worked for the landowner and whatever. And the problem is they had no choice. They had to own this. So they worked out this transaction where during the duration of the Pesach, it belongs to the with a non-Jew. Now, everybody agrees you can sell the chametz to a non-Jew before Pesach. The problem is if you have a return clause, there's and they don't take in your possession, it starts to add a question if that's really a what they call an arama. Arama means a legal fiction. This is not really a sale. Oh, the janitor at the Jewish Center or whatever now owns $1 billion of chametz of all in the Manhattan. You know, it's a little bit a little ridiculous. Okay, so there are many. If you don't have a lot of chametz, definitely meritorious to just eat it all up. And if you have a little bit, just throw it out and just don't use the sale at all. If you got a whole scotch collection and it's hundreds of dollars, okay, fine, use the sale. But I'm saying, if you got like a half a box of Cheerios, just throw it out. Okay, it's just like, you know, that's it. Burn it, throw it out. That's it. We keep on going. You have three sections. You have your chametz section, which you're going to sell and you're going to seal up. Your kidneys, which is, you know, let's say your cornflakes, you can have it in your domain. And then your kosher Pesach section. Okay, so you'll organize your kitchen that way. Classic mistake, clean up all your stuff. Your vacuum bag fills up with all kinds of chametz you can clean up, but you leave it in the thing, so you got to throw that out. Okay, very important thing. You got to make sure that you sell your chametz. I literally every year will get a call on Erev Pesach morning, way after, you know, like, Rabbi, I didn't fill out the form. So I'm literally Rabbi Levine, who is the rabbi of the Jewish Center, who we MJE do our thing. I am calling him up. He is at, and he, well, the way it works like this, you don't sell it to the rabbi. You sign, you give a power of attorney document saying Rabbi Levine can sell on my behalf. Rabbi Levine takes all those documents of power of attorney, and then he works with typically Rabbi Willig, because it's a very complicated transaction. And the non-Jew that we use is actually a lawyer. The non-Jewish lawyer, so he appreciates the complexity of the transaction. The person who really understands what's going on. We have, so Rabbi Levine was at the conference room selling the chametz. It had to do it on behalf of his MGU. Who shall remain nameless? We are protecting the guilty. We are protecting the guilty. Okay, don't be that person. Okay. Okay. No, that wasn't him. It wasn't him. Okay, and it's been different people every year. There's always going to be the who's going to get my who am I going to get the call at like 9 o'clock in the morning on Erev Pesach. So sell your chametz, fill out the form, hand it as soon as possible. Next, kosher in your kitchen, minimal koshering. Okay, so let's say you're going to be away for the first days, the last days. You're going to be only there at home for a chol mite for like 2 days. Like, okay, I mean, you know, so I don't need to. I'm not going to be doing any massive cooking. But basically, A, you could get away with nearly no koshering. You can't have any chametz, but if you can just double wrap your food, toss in the oven, don't have to kosher that. I'm talking about the lazy person option, okay? I want to put that out there. Not saying that anybody around this table or anybody here would want to access that, okay? Okay, we are protecting the innocent and the guilty here. Okay, you are going to put your assuming that you wiped out you have to clean your refrigerator and your thing. You can't have bits of chametz on there. You put the chametz, you have your thing, you put it in a bag in your refrigerator. So your refrigerator is fine. You'll use a paper plate. Now, if you want to have a kosher one thing, you'll have to do a you know, put the fire on the grate and heat it up for about 15 minutes. You can put a pan on top of it with water so it covers all the surface area. And then you'll have your kosher Pesach. You buy your one kosher Pesach frying pan. So you can make eggs, let's say. And you have your one, you're using one quarter of your oven, your stovetop. Okay? Your treif oven, you have a double wrap. You koshered one thing. The sink, you're not going to put hot water. You're going to dump it. You're going to wash things in the air. You're not put things on down. Or you are, but you make sure a lot of soap and there's no residual. So, if you're going to put something hot on the counter, you're going to put down a towel. Okay? That is the minimalistic way. Okay? You should, yes. Yeah, yeah. That's the minimal approach. Mac will say, I'm having a Seder. I'm inviting people over. So you've got to kosher your whole place. I have a video on that. I'm not going to go through that. You know, there's koshering of the counters. There's koshering of the sink. Koshering of the stovetop. There's koshering of the oven. There's koshering of the microwave. There's wiping down the refrigerator. I have a video on that. You look at it. Done. I'm not going to go through that right now. Next, menu planning. Okay. All right. The most important thing, of course, if you have guests, if you're having people over, you want to plan your menu so then you can actually save time and save money because you know exactly I'm making this, I'm making this, I'm buying this, I'm buying this. And you go online, there are tons of menu planning ideas. Pesach. You shop effectively, efficiently, so you don't spend $1 billion. Now, cooking on Yontif, you're allowed to cook on Yontif. I know that. You cook on Yontif. On Shabbos, you cannot cook. Now, the key thing is that there is issue. So, in fact, you can turn up the flame. And if the thing's going to get burnt, you can lower the flame. Turning off the flame is again, I'm talking about gas, electric. There are certain rules about that. Moshe Feinstein had the leniency that you could turn off a gas stovetop. Not everybody agrees with him. I don't go into all the halachic details about that. You cannot light something. You cannot use the electric ignition. You have to do is that's why people have a Yahrzeit candle. They take a candle from the Yahrzeit candle. They go to the thing. They turn the gas on. They skip quickly past the lighting, and then it go and they light it manually. Okay. The oven you keep on at a lower temperature. They have ovens that are what they call literally Sabbath mode, but it really means Yontif mode, where because the problem is you have digital, you can't by putting it up, you're changing the digital readout. That's a rabbinic form of writing. So you have ovens that that basically they have a whole strategy. But that's you can go on to there's a whole you have that, you don't have that, you can put it on regular. Depends on how sophisticated your oven is. If it's manual dial, you're in shape, and you can put it up. You can lower it down. Just can't turn it off.
Very hot.
It will get very hot. It will get very hard in your kitchen. So one strategy is, then if you don't want to have heat, is to buy a kosher Pesach crock pot and cook in your crock pot. Also, crock pots are good. Let's say you don't want a kosher. You want you want a food before Pesach, kosher Pesach food, but you're not kosher yet. You have a kosher Pesach crock pot, put it on the table, plug it in, set it, and forget it. And you can have some delicious soup and stews and all kinds of good stuff. You can do enormous amount of cooking can be done in a crock pot. Just go on, check out YouTube. All right, I'm not doing that. All right, basic laws of kosher, of basic laws of chametz. Okay, here's the basic things you got to know. Chametz is prohibited eating regular chametz, prohibited from roughly on Monday morning around 10 o'clock. Because Erev Pesach, the Torah forbade chametz even the time when the Pesach offering was offered. So that was noon, and the rabbis, since people were nervous they're gonna eat chametz till the time, they backed it up 2 hours, roughly around 10 o'clock in the New York area. We'll get the times out to you soon. So chametz is forbidden to be consumed. Before that, you have to search for the chametz, real searching. You want to put a the idea of the 10 pieces of bread is typically was supposed to be a way to ensure so somebody else, not you, the person, put it out the bread, and then you gather the whole thing. That makes it a whole stupid thing. It's a way to make sure people do a proper bedikah. You search chametz the night before, you make a blessing, you gather in a area, you have food that you're going to eat in the morning, your last bagel, as they say, the last bagel. Okay, if you're firstborn, you have to go to a siyum. There's the Tanya B'charot. We could talk about that in more detail. And then you have to burn the chametz. There's a custom of burning at least a kazayit of chametz. All shuls have fire. If you bring your one slice of bread, and then yes. So there's a minhag. Let me get back to you on that because really it becomes this is a little bit. If you put out the 10th thing, what are you searching? You know exactly where you put it. What that's,
I didn't know that.
Right. It's the main concern was that it was supposed to be somebody else putting it out, and therefore to ensure that your searching is proper. Really, if you don't put that out and you just do a real searching of a room and don't find anything, then you do the mitzvah. The mitzvah did you search and define each room as being a chametz-free room? Yes, that's the mitzvah 100%. We'll go back to the minute. I'll post about the minute we get closer to that about the putting out the bread. And if you're a single person, okay, it's a fair point. Okay. What people get distracted with is all the new. I just mentioned 45 minutes of preparation, but the main thing is the Seder. And they okay, and they and then like they do is they'll take out the Haggadah, pull the dust off, open it up from page one, and they'll just go through it in a very perfunctory way. No. This is supposed to be the educational experience. You have to, so if you're a guest, you should have some, you should review the whole Haggadah. We're going to do some. Torah nuggets, some Seder nuggets next week. So you'll have something to bring to your Seder. You come in like a rock star, which has to be, of course, short, sweet, compelling, interesting. And, what's it? But you got to prepare. The guy only, in order, the person only prepared the brisket and the potato kugel and the matzo ball soup. Those are all very important. I don't want to dismiss anything. But then the actual Seder, the guy, like, you're just reading the words in English through the whole thing. That's a lame Seder, to be honest. Because what insight did you give? Your goal is to have a discussion, to have a walk out in a new insight about the nature of slavery and freedom, and some aspect about the various the Haggadah. The Haggadah is the basic text, but it's not really the mitzvah of Sipur. Sipur is telling the story, and this is a springboard. And those people, as I mentioned, I used a metaphor last year, such a good one. In jazz, you have the melody, and then you have the improv. So if you have just reading the if you're reading the Haggadah, you're just doing the basic melody. In jazz, that's boring. Where's the improv? What's the improv? Well, you gotta bring it. Where you gotta bring your creativity, your insight. You gotta prepare. So there's a ton of it. You go to West Side Judaica, there's a ton of Haggadahs. Don't go to West Side. Go online. There's a ton of Haggadahs. Maybe you might find very interesting, right? Soloveitchik by Jonathan Sacks. There's no end. There's a ton of there's an endless sea of Haggadahs in English. Well, okay, that's just a practical one. That's good. Yeah, that free if you shop you buy $100 at most stores. Okay, so next. Okay, we're gonna go into that more deeply next time. What is Chol HaMoed? What is Chol HaMoed? Yeah, so Chol means a weekday of the Moed. So is it Chol or is it Moed? It's interesting. So it's not like we have Yontif, we take a complete break, and then we have it. So a person should, during these days, ideally, if they can, take off some time, make it festive. Should have meals which are good. Let's say you like meat and you like wine, you should have that every meal. Simchas Yontif, the Simchas Yontif applies to all the days equally. Should have good meals. You should dress a little nicer to reflect the things. So even if you have to go to work, you should up your game on the dress department so you're reflecting that it's a special day. Okay? Person can't really go on to brand new financial things. Well, they have to work so that they to avoid whatever, losing their job. They're allowed to work. But basically, there are certain things in order to do work, malacha, on the intermediate days for after the holiday is forbidden. Really, things are only which are necessary for the holiday. Because they want to leave space so you can enjoy it. So to go out with friends, have a good time, spend some time learning, it's supposed to have a spiritual part. It shouldn't be like Siddharim, grind, Yontif. There should be some fun. Your dress should reflect it, the food should reflect it, and you should have a good time as much as you can, to the extent that you can. Not everybody has the freedom, but if you do, but just try to, you want to put the moed back into Chol HaMoed, okay? Have a good time. Try to do it. That's why all the restaurants will be kosher for open here in Manhattan. By the way, you gotta, that's another thing. There are a few restaurants that are going to be open. I'll post a list. As you can imagine, they're super in demand. So you gotta, and of course, because they have to, because their cost is enormous and they're going to pass that cost on to you.
Make sure you get a res reservation is what you're saying.
Oh, big time. Yes. You put down a deposit because it's very expensive for them. Now, you may not want to do that. Buy your food, make it in your own house. Okay. All right. Let's keep on going. All right. Ask your pace of questions as early as possible. Timely rabbinic responses may not be available at the last minute. My wife wrote that. She's basically saying, don't bother my husband to the last second. Somebody will be bothering me the last second. Okay. Now, here's something very nice. Before Pesach, this is a nice practice. People call family and friends, wish them a Chag Kosher Sameach. Call family and friends to wish them a good Yontif. Passover, have a sweet Passover. What are you doing? What's going on? It's a time for family to get together. And if you're not even going to be together, at least speak to them before Yontif and wish them the very best. So this is the basic stuff. At least I want to put in your mind, just to get you in the, let's call it in the Pesach state of mind. The key main things I want to highlight. is number one, planning to fail, failing to plan. Failing to plan is planning to fail. And Franklin, you have clarity on the schedule. You got to figure out your what you, where you're going to be for the days of the holiday. You're going to host. You're going to be hosted. A blend of two. When you're going to be hosting, and then working at your environment, the shopping, the cleaning, the bedika, the koshering, the cooking, chametz, just chametz laws. Can't own chametz. Can't eat chametz. You can't get benefit from chametz. You can't even chametz in a mixture. And those are the basic rules. And I will post, I'll be responding to, I work the hardest my busy season. The accountants work very hard before April 15th. I will be working pretty hard, trying to keep I feel
Up with all the questions.
A commitment to many of the MGers are doing Pesach for the first time, or doing Pesach in a more diligent thing for the first time, or to second time. And the reality is that we cover a lot of material, but let's be—I'm gonna make you gotta give you permission to point out that Pesach, the laws of Pesach, are very complicated. Okay, so I will be looking stuff up, and I've been doing Pesach for my whole life. So you don't feel bad. You ask the questions, and together you plan it out, and you have enough time for yourself to come into the Seder strong. So you can be elevated. You can have a spiritual experience. You can share a spiritual experience with others, and with you can have a good Pesach experience. It can really lift a person. It's really a highlight. In fact, you ask most people what their favorite holiday. Many people will say Pesach. What? There you go. It's time for families to get together. It has an intellectual component. Of course, everybody loves the food. Jews eat, by the way, there's always a compensation because they have to have no bread, they're only having matzah. So Jews eat at least another 20 to 30% more, just sort of a fact. It has a compensation mechanism. Okay, whatever. So these are some of the highlights, and next week we're going to get into Seder nuggets to improve your Seder. Okay, my goal is to get put together 10 of those next week. All right, any questions?
I won.
Now, because you're supposed to explain about kosher type of like
Ah, that's okay. So, Eitan brought a question. So, on Yontif, we just say Chag Sameach. Okay. But we, by Pesach, we say Chag Kosher Sameach. You should have a kosher and joyous holiday, indicating that the challenge to have a kosher for Pesach experience is not so simple. I identified there's a lot of work involved. Okay. So, that's the only kind of freedom. All right, guys. Excellent question, Nathan. Thank you so
One
much.
quick question.
Yes. Please.
Between the first days and the second days, you don't shave. But during the 40 days, I can shave.
Okay. So, all right. So,
There's no
Scott,
like there's
all
no
right. So,
requirement
Scott,
for me to go
all
like
right. So Scott brought up a next level question. Okay. Good, Scott. It's not apparently it's not your first year in the fellowship there, senior fellowship. Our Scott's one of our veterans asked a very good question. I didn't bring this up and I should have added it. So here's as everybody knows, on the second night of Pesach, we start counting the Omer. Okay? There is a custom of observing a measure of mourning during this period of time. We don't get married between the second day of Pesach through Lag BaOmer. Some Ashkenazim have a custom of from Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Still nearly, well, there's two basic customs. And so, and we don't get haircuts. And there's, a question of haircuts also. So, shaving, there's different practices. Some people don't shave at all for 33 days. Some people shave only for Shabbat. And some people shave after a few days of getting scruffy if they are a clean shaven person to shave. Certainly for work, if you're a person who's clean shaven, you work in an environment where you have to be clean shaven. The minhag was never accepted when there'll be financial loss. So, if you work in a very, law firm that requires you to be a super 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 whatever super smooth looking. That's that. Nowadays people are very chill on the facial hair. Nowadays used to everything is very relaxed. But excellent point there. So those are the different customs, and that's it. So those are your options there, Scott.
Cool. Thank you. I always like to double check.
That's good. Yes.
period is like not distinct from the rest of the 33.
It is, because even though 30, because you're still even though that people don't go to parties during the Lag B'Omer on Chol HaMoed, since it's a national party, people go to concerts and parties. So it's sort of like a, it's sort of like a, you know, it's, you're not doing a full, because there is no mourning on Yontif. That's why the Ashkenazic custom was to start from Rosh Chodesh Iyar, which is the following month, and then do 33 days from that point on. The custom is because it's commemorating the destruction of the rabbis, 24,000 rabbis of students of Rabbi Akiva. All right, that's what we'll talk about that when we get a little further on. All right, any questions? I mean, there are a lot of questions, but anything that comes to mind, you know? Beautiful. All right, guys. Excellent. All right, so Scott, hold on. Stay on for 1 second. Yeah, yeah, last question.
Everything is important.
Okay. You don't have to do that, by the way.
Somebody told me that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm very confused because my entire life I've been tinfoiling everything.
Okay. So by the way, okay, let me just. All right. So Jamie brought up a practice of people, there's a thing called the Chumra de Pischa, which means the stringency of Pesach. Many people, even if they will kosher their counters, will lay down a layer of tinfoil. That is just, it's a chumra. You don't have to do that. Or they do that with their refrigerator. If you wash out your refrigerator and you know it's perfectly clean, you don't have to tinfoil it. But people love to, you know. So, and tinfoil, the only thing, the tinfoil, where it is legitimate is the stovetop, because even you kosher, it's all not so clearly, if the enamel is really so kosherable. So to lay that down on that, that makes sense. But you don't have to, your counters, if you kosher your counters, if it's a material that is kosherable, you don't have to tinfoil it. You will see people strict like that, and but you don't have to do it. Then you have to, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be tinfoil, it could be, you put anything. But people love the tinfoil. You can do it enough here. And again, if you are not doing a lot of cooking, so you just put down a towel and you put your hot pot on there. You can do it like that. It's also fine. It has to be clean. I mean, again, you can't be leaking out, you know, chunks of chametz. Okay. Yeah.
Plastic.
Yeah. You're not kashering your refrigerator. You make sure that any gunk, which is typically going to be from a chametz stuff, it has to be perfectly clean, because that's where you're. So people will not. But either they'll put either tinfoil or saran wrap or press and seal, because they want to make sure that if they put a hot pot on something, they won't land, you know, it just, that's a, but if you do a visual inspection and you did a perfect job cleaning up, you don't have to cover it at all. Yeah, it makes no difference. Well, did you clean it before underneath there?
Cleaned it before, laid on tin foil, and then I've had it on the entire
day. Right, but you should check, make sure there's no crumbs or anything.
Because I was too busy.
Okay, fine. I got you.
Tin foil on a stovetop?
No. The refrigerator. It doesn't have to be on the stovetop. It doesn't have to be on the stovetop. Because the stovetop, I'll get to that. I didn't go through all the koshering details, but there's no question about the enamel there, if it's really kosherable. And also, we have certain stringency for Pesach about koshering. So definitely top of your stovetop tin foil. But the counters and the, like the refrigerator. What? In general, so you have. Yeah, so you have your racks. Well, we're going to talk about koshering the racks. But again, assuming that you kosher the racks, or you have special kosher vessel racks, people will tend, you know, the question about the enamel, is that kosherable? There's a debate about that. So therefore, people will then lay down copious amounts of tin foil onto their stovetop. Either they won't kosher it, because that's another way. It's easier to cover tinfoil and don't want to be putting, you know, pouring boiling hot water over everything, or that's the basic move. Josh, you look perplexed.
Well, so picture like the burners, the foil, and the
no, the burner is exposed, but around it, the grate, underneath the grate. They even have those little, they even make those tinfoil things underneath it, and then you just put tinfoil around those things as well.
I think I've also seen people this on like Amazon, these little like silicone, you know, mats that you could put down on your stove.
That's next level fancy, right? Okay.
Yeah, they're not expensive. You can get them on Amazon.
Okay. All right. So let me stop the recording. Stop the recording.